The America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Windstorms gusting to more than 70 miles per hour swept across the Midwest and the East, knocking out power to more than 1.4 million customers and bringing rain and flooding across a wide swath of North America. A motorist who drove past a roadblock was swept away by a creek in West Virginia, and two people were killed in separate weather-related accidents in New York, including one in which a tree fell on a vehicle. A Virginia teenager was seriously injured when a tree fell on her as she waited for a school bus on Wednesday. Michigan and Ohio were the hardest hit by the power outages, with about 375,000 customers affected in each state. The majority had electricity restored by late Thursday. The American general leading military efforts in Iraq will reestablish his headquarters in Qatar, reflecting what he described as a sense of urgency in the face of increasing attacks on U.S. and allied troops there. General John Abizade, head of U.S. Central Command, said resistance forces in Iraq number no more than 5,000, but are showing new levels of coordination. U.S. officials have previously expressed uncertainty over the number and nature of the resistance forces, which have carried out increasingly bold and deadly attacks on American and allied troops and other targets. On Wednesday, suicide bombers devastated an Italian military base in Nasiriyah, killing at least 18 Italians. Iran warned on Thursday of unpredictable consequences if the UN watchdog finds it in breach of a global pact against atomic weapons, as Washington accused the United Nations of playing down evidence Iran wants a bomb. The United States wants the board to declare Iran in violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which could trigger economic sanctions. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA said, "I hope we do not reach such a stage, because then things could get very easily out of control, and then it could lead to unpredictable consequences." More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
Highway police in Madrid, Spain, stopped a driver they believed was using his cell phone while driving, but the driver maintained he was just scratching his ear. The driver showed the two officers that the last call from his phone went out the night before. The duo huddled, then came back and fined him $70 anyway. The charge they leveled against the motorist? Driving while holding his ear with his right hand in a permanent fashion. Spain's new Don't Scratch and Drive campaign kicks off next week. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Honey, I have got just what you need.
I've heard that before.
No, it's DayQuil. It'll help your cold symptoms so you can get back your energy.
Really?
You could even go shopping.
Shopping.
Designer handbags are 90% off.
Yeah, because we're out of dog food.
DayQuil. The non-drowsy, stuffy head, sore throat, coughing, aching, fever help get back your energy. Medicine. Use it directed. And now it lasts 50% longer.
Is anything going to be real in our world, or is everything to be simulated reality, created by profit-seeking corporations? Already we have Disneyland's plastic imitations of quaint European villages. We have dairy creamers that contain no cream and don't come from dairies. We have pets that are not actual animals but pre-programmed robots. We have kids playing baseball on handheld computers instead of out on a baseball field. And now, even the small sensory joys in our lives are no longer real, but instead are synthetic replications. Take the pleasure of buying a new car and inhaling that new car smell. Is it real, or is it nuance? Cadillac has revealed that it now imbues each of its vehicles with an artificial scent called Nuance that was created in a chemistry lab by a company that specializes in, quote, aroma quality management. Leather seats? No need to go to that expense, for the company can make a plastic covering that, it claims, feels and smells more like leather than leather. That's only the start of fake fragrances in automobiles. An executive of this smell-simulating company says, "We believe there is growth potential in people wanting to be in this big, burly SUV with rich walnut, and they want it to smell like wood." So, now they've got a wood perfume for SUVs, which is necessary, since even real wood paneling is lacquered and doesn't have an actual wood smell. Then there's a car's sound. Remember the great sensual rumble of old Fords? Well, now they're back. Not for real, but thanks to an artificial sound system. Ford used computers and focus groups to come up with a classic rumbling sound, and then it hired a company to install a system of resonators, so Ford's new pickup trucks artificially rumble like an old V8. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the brave new world of marketing, no need to experience reality, just fake it.
Look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. In this first hour, I want to get into this larger issue. How can we restore human rights to humans? It may sound like a rhetorical question, but it's so easy, I think, and I see this right across the board. It is so easy, whether it's a liberal or a conservative, whether it's right or left, whatever. It is so easy to sit around and complain. Right? Say, and there certainly is a lot to complain about. But in this hour, what I want to do is focus on a very real problem that we have in the United States that is becoming, well, has already become, already is, a very real problem all around the world. And one that I believe we can do something about, and that is the linchpin, that little pin that's holding everything together. That is inhibiting democracy, that is driving the movement in the United States toward an autocratic, feudalistic form of government, sometimes referred to as the conservative agenda or neoliberalism. That would be how they refer to it in Europe. And the key to this thing has been this idea that was absolutely rejected by the founders of this nation, that corporations should have human rights, or for that matter, that governments should have rights, or that churches should have rights, or that unions should have rights, or that any group, the civic clubs, I mean, you name it, the foundational concept of democracy in America is that the sole holder of rights are you and me, the human beings. We, the people. And that when we get together and we create any kind of institution, whether it's a company, a corporation,
a union, a civic club, a church, even a government. That when we do that, we, the holders of the rights, grant to that institution at our pleasure, that is, by our choice, certain privileges. But we hold the rights. And in 1886, the United States Supreme Court is said to have ruled in the case, the name of the case is Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, that corporations, not unions, not churches, not nonprofit organizations, not civic clubs or veterans groups, but for-profit corporations alone are considered persons under the 14th Amendment of the Constitution and entitled to equal protection under the law. Now, what you need to know are two things. Number one, the consequences of this, which I'm going to get into in just a minute. And I started out by saying, you know, it's so easy to complain, and I really want to hold up a positive vision here in this hour, in this day. Here it is, by the way. It's a beautiful Friday here in Vermont. We had about 8 or 9 inches of snow last night. I am looking out the window as I speak at trees that have 3, 4, 5 inch thick piles of just these little tiny, you know, piles of snow on top of the branches. You know how, and the telephone wires outside the window must have 3 or 4 inches of snow, and the sun is out and it's bright sunshine. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. And this afternoon, right after I get off the air, I'm hopping on a plane to San Francisco, where I'll be speaking at the Physicians for National Healthcare Conference, PNHC, I think it is, .org. Yes, www.pnhc.org in San Francisco. I'll be back in time to be back on the air here again on Monday. But I know it's just going to be beautiful from the sky, too, looking down on this this winter wonderland. It's just here in the mountains of Vermont. Anyhow, a positive vision for America, and the positive vision of for America is that we, the people, will once again take back, will once again be the holders of the rights in America. And that we will encourage small businesses, and we will encourage middle-sized businesses, and we will appropriately regulate large businesses so that they don't intrude in the political arena. After all, they can't vote. What business do they have in politics? This was the absolute logic of the founders of this nation. The absolute logic. I mean, they were completely unambiguous about it, that this is how it should be. And we have gone astray. This is a Wisconsin law, section 4479A, political contributions by corporations. This used to be the law of the land. This is from Wisconsin, but it's typical of all the other states. Every state had laws like this on the books at one time. Because this law reflected the founders' perspective of America. Let me read you just very quickly. Political contributions by corporations. No corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree or to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free service of its officers or employees or thing of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. Did you get that? Started out, no corporation. Penalty? Any officer, employee, agent, or attorney, or other representative. See, this barred lobbying as well. Lobbying used to be called bribery and influencing. It used to be against the law in the United States. The founders thought it was a crime, what Haley Barbour does. Penalty, any officer, employee, agent, or attorney, or their representative of any corporation acting for and in behalf of such corporation who shall violate this act shall be punished by imprisonment in the state prison for a period of not less than 1 nor more than 5 years, or by both such fine and imprisonment in the discretion of the court. If the corporation shall be subject to a penalty, then by forfeiture in double the amount of any fine. And if ATO regulations run over 800 pages, that's a free market? If you want to start a corporation, there's hundreds of pages of corporate law that you have to follow. That's free? No, we have created in the United States the substrate, the basis, the roadbed on which businesses can do business. And it's a fine thing. Doing business has done a lot of good for this country and for the world. It's done a lot of harm as well. We can talk about that, but it's also done a lot of good. But to say that it's free, there's a free enterprise, free trade. These are frames or euphemisms that conceal the reality. You know, more than 80% of our court system, more than 80% of our total court system is used by corporations rather than individuals. You know, one company suing another, enforcing contracts, you know, cutting deals, doing stock sales, making IPOs. More than 80% of the total activity of our state and federal courts is corporate, not individual. And yet our last Secretary of the Treasury said he thought corporations should pay no income taxes at all. They shouldn't pay for that. No, corporations are going to use the infrastructure that we've created. They're going to use our currency. They're going to use our Treasury Department. They're going to use the stable dollar. The dollar's getting a little less stable. I don't know if you noticed, gold is up to $3.95. Anyhow, they're going to use all this stuff, but no. Who's going to pay for it? The people who draw a paycheck. Human rights are for humans. Corporations are not persons. We must update the 14th Amendment to insert natural before the word persons so corporations can no longer claim the right to lie, the right to hide their crimes, the right to buy politicians and influence elections, and the right to force themselves on communities that don't want them. How do we go about doing that? And what are the consequences? This is just extraordinary what's going on here with Tom DeLay. I got to tell you about this right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the charts.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24/7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by recruiting will and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Lost in a strange city, nowhere to turn. Far cry from the streets that I came from.
And welcome back to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. How can we restore human rights to humans here? This discussion we're having on day 123 of the search for the senior White House official who committed treason.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Day 278 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 765 in the search for the anthrax mailer. And day 790 in the search for George Bush's father's business partner's son, Osama bin Laden. Time goes on. This from The Economist on November 8th. Of 2003, last week's Economist. In 1968, they're talking about lobbyists. Okay. They point out almost all new appointments on K Street. This is where the lobbyists hang out. The lobbying, in fact, here, first of all, in 1968, there were only 62 lobbyists. Now there are 21,000. And, says the Economist, they don't just try to influence legislators. They raise money for them, too. They point out there is a steadily tightening bond between the grand old party, the GOP, and the lobbying industry. They talk about Haley Barbour, for example. Mr. Barbour is a power broker straight out of the novels of his fellow Mississippian John Grisham. Barbour, Griffith & Rogers is perhaps the most powerful lobbying firm in the country. Haley Barbier is also the part owner of one of Washington's most popular watering holes, the caucus room. They say the Republican Party is in the process of absorbing K Street into its political machine, in much the same way as Franklin Roosevelt and his heirs once used government to the Democrats' advantage. But it's a little different, they point out. Now the Republican Party is using its sway over both K Street and the wider business community to build a private sector equivalent of Roosevelt's machine. Roosevelt's machine, you'll recall, was driven by the fact that people, we the people, were getting services and saying, hey, this is, you know, this works. It hands out government contracts to businesses that favor its causes, the economist says of the Republican Party. It provides its most loyal foot soldiers, from congressional aides to congressmen, with a pot of gold on K Street when they retire. And they sum up the article. Woodrow Wilson once complained that, quote, the government which was designed for the people has got into the hands of the bosses and their employers, the special interests. An invisible empire has been set up above the forms of democracy, end quote. And they close the article by saying, Mr. Barber shows that the invisible empire is on the rise again. And now, Tom DeLay, setting up this charity. Apparently, they haven't even gotten nonprofit status. But you can, if you would like, your corporation can give Tom DeLay $500,000 and party with the Republicans in New York City this summer. Sound like a deal? Not only that, you can deduct it from your taxes because a certain portion of that money is going to go to help abused and neglected children. Isn't that sweet? Just a remarkable story in today's New York Times. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. News without conflicts of global corporate interests. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Is your home making you sick? A Canadian author recommends a checkup. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Angela Hobbs' excitement about her newly remodeled home in Ontario soon turned into frustration. The teacher and mother of two began to feel weak and confused, and at times she could barely get out of bed. 30 doctors could not figure out what was ailing Hobbs, but she noticed that she felt better when she was away from home. That led her to diagnose her own problem, a sick house. Hobbs defines a sick house as one where a combination of electromagnetic fields, chemicals, molds, and other toxins negatively affect at least one of the people living there. And she's written a book about it called The Sick House Survival Guide. It describes her experience with environmental illness and the actions she took to overcome it. Hobbs says her first order of business was to stop using chemical cleaners. She says we really don't know how household chemicals affect us, especially in combination with each other. She also got rid of unnecessary electrical devices which create electromagnetic fields in the home. Hobbs says the typical house is now buzzing with electricity, with electronic devices in every room, each of which gives off an electromagnetic field. Studies on electromagnetic effects on the human body are inconclusive. But Hobbs says it's wise to err on the safe side and limit your exposure to electrical devices and power sources. She shuts down unneeded circuits at night, especially in the bedrooms. Hobbs says if you're experiencing fatigue, confusion, or other symptoms that can't be explained, you should look at your home as a possible source of your illness. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer in the morning, I'd a hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd a hammer out danger, I'd a hammer out a warning, I'd a hammer out the love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. How can we restore human rights to humans? I think we have to start by saying, hey, enough already. 21,000 lobbyists representing corporate interests in Washington, by and large, corporate interests in Washington, D.C. But in 1968, there were how many? 62? 62. The human rights are for humans. If you go to TomHartman.com, our website, you'll notice a link that says Restore Democracy. And it's our 10 steps to restore democracy to the United States of America. And number one is human rights are for humans. Very simple, very straightforward. And it has been absolutely subverted. There was a Supreme Court decision in 1886 that turned it on its side, but then it just kind of slept for a long, long time until Ronald Reagan came along. And during the Reagan administration, the first serious con takeover in America, the government stopped enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act and other laws that constrained corporations. And as more and more of these conservative judges were put into place, keeping in mind that more than 80% of the activity that happens in our courts has to do with corporations, more and more of these conservative judges were put into place, and suddenly corporations started getting more and more rights and powers and privileges. So that now we've got this out-of-control situation. It's an absolutely out-of-control situation. And, you know, while the Republicans are leading the charge, they're the most obvious and the most egregious. The Democrats are not that far behind. I think it's extraordinary what Howard Dean is doing, raising money. Basically, you know, his average donation is $87. Compare that to George Bush, who raised $2 million last night by walking into two rooms in Florida. But it is, this situation has run amok. Here in today's New York Times, article by Michael Slackman, GOP leader solicits money for charity tied to convention. Talking about this fancy brochure complete with pictures of fireworks and a golf course that invites potential donors to give as much as $500,000 to spend time with Tom DeLay during the Republican convention in New York City next summer, and have part of the money go to help abused and neglected children. Now, Mr. DeLay said through his staff that the entire effort was fundamentally intended to help children.
But aides to Mr. DeLay, reading from this article by Michael Slackman, today's New York Times, but aides to Mr. DeLay, the House Majority Leader from Texas, acknowledged that part of the money would go to pay for late-night convention parties, a luxury suite during President Bush's speech at Madison Square Garden, and yacht cruises. Yes.
Just a little bit of the money here is going to go to yacht cruises and late-night convention parties and luxury suites.
But it's a charity. You can write it off.
If you would like to give $500,000 to Mr. DeLay.
Senator Bill Frist, our friendly multimillionaire who has learned how to game the medical system, is planning, he's following Mr. DeLay's lead, as the New York Times says, planning to hold a concert and reception in conjunction with the convention as a way of raising money for AIDS charities. Now, he hasn't put together his charity yet, but he's already put this thing together. Mr. DeLay's charity is called Celebrations for Children, Inc., and it was set up back in September and has no track record of work, according to the New York Times. It does have three employees, however, who will be paid by the tax-deductible donations that are given. They include Mr. DeLay's daughter, his longtime advisor and friend Craig Richardson, and Rob Jennings, a Republican fundraiser. Sounds like the perfect people to administer a charity for abused kids, right? And the New York Times adds, but because the money collected will go into a nonprofit organization, donors get a tax break, and Mr. DeLay will never have to account publicly for who contributed. Now, why might that be? Well, the New York Times speculates, or suggests campaign finance experts say, that this shields those who may be trying to win favor with one of the most powerful lawmakers in Washington. And, you know, same deal with Dr. Frist. In a letter sent out on behalf of the Senator Frist charitable event, the New York Times says, potential donors, the top tier is $250,000, are advised, quote, this is the only event during the convention which Senator Frist will personally host. In other words, if you want to get in there and schmooze with the good multimillionaire Senator Stooge of the drug companies in the health insurance industry, you're welcome to do it. It'll cost you $250,000, but you're welcome to do it. Mr. DeLay has a little more ambitious program. Mr. DeLay, according to the New York Times, quote, is offering donors private dinner with himself and his wife, the chance to participate in a golf tournament, a late-night party with a rock group, access to a luxury suite for elected officials and donors, as well as the yacht cruise, tickets to Broadway shows, and more. All tax-deductible and all in secret. How can we restore human rights to humans? How can we get money out of politics? How can we clean this thing up? 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon's on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It's interesting you talk about all the partying and all the favors and everything, you know, that's done at these political conventions, especially the Republicans, because of course that's where most of the rich people are at, and that's where most of these favors are being done by the politicians and all that. I want to ask, you know, these guys have their little 4-day and 4-night infomercials on TV, and all it is just a bunch of propaganda and a bunch of BS, and everything's been decided ahead of time. I want to know why the taxpayers have to pick up the bill for these morons to put on their little four-day infomercials.
Which bill are you talking about? The taxpayers picking up the conventions of the political parties?
Yeah, yeah. They pass on the cost of the political conventions to the taxpayers. They do this every 4 years. None of the other political parties get that kind of favor, but the Democrats and the Republicans, who don't need any favors from the taxpayers. They pass this on to the taxpayers. Nothing ever gets decided at these conventions anyway. It's all decided ahead of time. It's just one more way that is ridiculous. A political system rips everyone off.
Well, I got to tell you, Joe, I'm not particular. I haven't done my homework here. I don't know what percentage of the costs or what types of costs involved in the political conventions might end up coming out of the pocket of the taxpayer. Do you? Do you have details?
What percentage? Well, it's like $25 million or something. The last conventions. I don't know what percentage of the cost of all that. My point is,
we'll have to look into this.
Yeah, my point is, you got all these billionaires and millionaires throwing all these parties and everything. You know, there's all this money rolling around anyway. Why does any of the cost need to go to the taxpayers for these things that don't really matter anyway? They're just 4 day infomercials.
Yep. Yeah.
Well,
good point.
That's my point. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. And you know, I largely agree. On the other hand, I mean, here's the flip side of that, and that is that if each one of us on our income tax returns, 106, 108 more or less million Americans who work, who pay income taxes, if we all check that little box that says, would you like to give $2 or $3, whatever it is this year, and that little box was raised to $5, it would provide enough money for public financing of campaigns that it would be equal to what was spent in the last presidential campaign cycle. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. Howard Dean says he wants to get 2 million people to give him $100 apiece. 2 million people. I mean, that's not a lot of people, and $100 is not a lot of money. So I think that public financing, we have to do one of two things. There's a third thing we have to do also. The third thing that we have to do, which is the point of this thing, is say corporations are no longer entitled to participate in politics. It was illegal for them to participate in politics from the founding of this country until the 1890s. And it was still illegal in many states right up to the Wisconsin law I read to you was repealed in 1954. Number one, get corporations out of politics. And number two, we must either provide public financing for elections, or we must go back and say to the media that are using the airwaves, to our electronic media at least, who are using the airwaves, you must provide. If you want to have a license to broadcast, if you want to have your cable show running over cables that go across the rights of way, that go along the public roads of America where we're providing the maintenance for them, if you want to use our commons, you get to contribute to our commons. And one of the most important of our commons is the vote. The commons being those things that we all own together in a constitutionally limited democratic republic. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number if you have thoughts on this. 1-800-825-5937. Jim in Dallas is on the line. Hey, Jim, how's Texas today?
Oh, it's overcast. Nice day. I guess my resentment comes in is, we've got our children dying in Iraq for this corporate war that this illegitimate president started, and he's hopscotching all over the country raising millions of dollars at my and your and the taxpayers' expense. That, I resent that highly. And I also resent the fact that he hasn't turned over any papers telling us what happened on September 11th. You know, there's a there was an airplane, a little Cessna, the other day got within 8 miles of the White House. And they scrambled aircraft from Andrews Air Force Base. Yet on 9/11, there was four hijacked planes that was in the sky, and yet no planes were scrambled. I want the answer to that question. And
well,
you know,
when did he know, and when did he know it? I mean,
I think he knew it when he was sitting in Florida reading to the children. That's my personal opinion, but.
Yeah, I think that's why the first question he asked was it the terrorists?
Well, absolutely. I think he knew all about it. Personally, I don't want to be paranoid, but I personally believe he did. And, you know, Tom, today is the end of the rush-free zone. And,
yeah, hang on just a second. I just want to clarify one point, Jim. I don't think that President Bush knew exactly what was going to happen, but there is so much evidence, including testimony of people within his own administration, that they had been warned that Al-Qaeda was up to something, that it was going to involve commercial aircraft, that it was going to New York City. You know, yeah, okay. So neither one of us are suggesting that he had a hand in this, but, you know.
Oh, no, not necessarily that. No, not at all. I just think that they knew or they had information that something was going to happen, and they just sat on their laurels and let it happen. That's my
opinion. And this is why they're refusing to give it to the 9/11 Commission.
Well, you know, and I would like to have the answer to that one question. Why weren't the airplanes scrambled? That's what I want to know. And I appreciate
There may be actually an innocent answer to that, Jim. And that is that day, you know, they were doing a test of the emergency system for scrambling airplanes and things. And it's possible that people thought that it was a test.
Sure.
Well, I don't know.
I don't
coincidence?
Believe it. I don't believe it. And but I appreciate your show an awful lot, and you've helped America become smarter, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your call. We have a couple more calls here, a few more minutes in the program. Laura in Oakland, California. Laura, we've just got about 30 seconds, but I can hold you over the break if you'd like. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I wanted to ask you about Howard Dean. And his position on corporate personhood and campaign finance reform.
Oh, that's a good one. Why don't you hang on, and we'll pick that up on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Ah, good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or a fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program sponsored by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. Laura, you still on the line there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Still here.
While we were during the break, it was the timing was just perfect. I went over to DeanForAmerica.com, Howard Dean's website, and if you click on the issues, there's a list there, and you click on campaign financing. And he's got a page called Take Back Our Democracy, an agenda for real campaign finance reform. And they go through a lengthy, detailed, and in some ways shocking rant about how the campaign finance has been so exploited, about corporations like, for example, the chairman of the Republican National Committee sent the chairman of Bristol-Myers Squibb a copy of the Republican health care package with a request for suggested changes, and in the same letter asked for a $250,000 donation. We must keep the lines of communication open, he wrote, and if we want to continue passing legislation that will benefit your industry, end quote. I mean, you know, so he just lays out how corrupt the system is. And then he's got a bunch of specific suggestions. Number one, fix the presidential finance system. And he goes through, there's some detail there. We've only got a couple minutes here, so I'm truncating this, but you can find it all on the web. Increase the public match. Improve incentives for candidates to accept public funding. Raise the primary spending limits. Fix the funding mechanism. Number two, establish a public finance option for all federal elections. Number three, offer to take back our democracy tax credit. Number four, take back the public airwaves, which is what I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Number five, abolish the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, and start over. It's become so corrupt and so screwed up. Number six, no more hanging chads, although he also says in there we've got to be very careful about these electronic voting machines. Number seven, embrace the Iowa good government model of nonpartisan redistricting so we don't see this thing like we've seen in Texas where the Republicans are just trying to rip off the vote. Number eight, protect the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And number nine, a national commission to strengthen American democracy. So,
well, he also came out in favor of IRV on TV.
Yeah, he has spoken in favor of instant runoff voting. I'm surprised that that's not on there, although I think that that's more of a long-term thing. You know, that's he's not making that a centerpiece of his campaign because that really is a long-term project. Laura, thanks for the call and thanks for the opportunity to bring this up. I'm sure the other Democratic candidates probably have similar positions. You can check them out on their websites. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want
it's
me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You
why
hate
why
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Windstorms gusting to more than 70 miles per hour swept across the Midwest and the East, knocking out power to more than 1.4 million customers and bringing rain and flooding across a wide swath of North America. A motorist who drove past a roadblock was swept away by a creek in West Virginia, and two people were killed in separate weather-related accidents in New York, including one in which a tree fell on a vehicle. A Virginia teenager was seriously injured when a tree fell on her as she waited for a school bus on Wednesday. Michigan and Ohio were the hardest hit by the power outages, with about 375,000 customers affected in each state. The majority had electricity restored by late Thursday. The CIA rejected as fantasy claims in a new book that it tried to negotiate a non-aggression pact with Osama bin Laden just 2 months before the September 11, 2001 airliner attacks against the U.S. The author of The Corridors of Terror says the CIA's Dubai station chief approached bin Laden while the al-Qaeda leader was being treated for a serious kidney ailment in the United Arab Emirates. He said the meeting took place in the American hospital in Dubai on July 12th, just 8 weeks before the 9/11 attacks. The American general leading military efforts in Iraq will reestablish his headquarters in Qatar, reflecting what he described as a sense of urgency in the face of increasing attacks on U.S. and allied troops there. General John Abizaid, head of U.S. Central Command, said resistance forces in Iraq number no more than 5,000, but are showing new levels of coordination. U.S. officials have previously expressed uncertainty over the number and nature of the resistance forces, which have carried out increasingly bold and deadly attacks on American and allied troops and other targets. On Wednesday, suicide bombers devastated an Italian military base in Nasiriyah, killing at least 18 Italians. More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
When Roy Williamson hit a tee shot off the fairway, the lie turned out to be much rougher than he thought. Williamson was bitten in the head by a rattlesnake when he went to retrieve his ball from some wetlands. He said he picked up the ball and felt something scratch at his right temple as he stood up. He saw blood and then the rattler, a good 6.5 or 7 feet long. Doctors said the snake bit him twice. They were able to deliver anti-venom and save his life despite the lethal bites. Williamson said he will play golf again, but will be much more careful. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is incredible. People everywhere are discovering they have 24 hours to live. With one pill a day, that's 24 hours to live without frequent heartburn. Yes, it's possible with Prilosec OTC. One pill a day can relieve heartburn for 24 hours. Holy moly, you could have zero heartburn. So, folks, get out there, because without frequent heartburn, you could have 24 hours to live it up.
One pill a day, 24 hours, zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Is anything going to be real in our world, or is everything to be simulated reality created by profit-seeking corporations? Already we have Disneyland's plastic imitations of quaint European villages. We have dairy creamers that contain no cream and don't come from dairies. We have pets that are not actual animals but pre-programmed robots. We have kids playing baseball on handheld computers instead of out on a baseball field. And now, even the small sensory joys in our lives are no longer real, but instead are synthetic replications. Take the pleasure of buying a new car and inhaling that new car smell. Is it real or is it nuance? Cadillac has revealed that it now imbues each of its vehicles with an artificial scent called Nuance that was created in a chemistry lab by a company that specializes in, quote, aroma quality management. Leather seats? No need to go to that expense, for the company can make a plastic covering that, it claims, feels and smells more like leather than leather. That's only the start of fake fragrances in automobiles. An executive of this smell-simulating company says, "We believe there is growth potential in people wanting to be in this big, burly SUV with rich walnut, and they want it to smell like wood." So, now they've got a wood perfume for SUVs, which is necessary since even real wood paneling is lacquered and doesn't have an actual wood smell. Then there's a car's sound. Remember the great sensual rumble of old Fords? Well, now they're back. Not for real, but thanks to an artificial sound system. Ford used computers and focus groups to come up with a classic rumbling sound, and then it hired a company to install a system of resonators so Ford's new pickup trucks artificially rumble like an old V8. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the brave new world of marketing, no need to experience reality, just fake it.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day
on the
America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. We have today Lisa Duggan. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
It's Duggan.
Duggan, thank you very much. Lisa Duggan is Associate Professor of American Studies and History at New York University. She's co-editor of Our Monica, Ourselves, The Clinton Affair, and The National Interest, and author of Sapphic Clashers, Sex, Violence, and American... Is that modernity? Or
yeah, that's modernity.
Yeah, that's a word that I have always... Anyway, which won the John Bonneville Prize for the American Historical Association in 2001. And you have this new book out, The Twilight of Equality, Neoliberalism, Cultural Politics, and the Attack on Democracy.
Yes.
It's extraordinary. It's a short book, which means, you know, readable.
And
I think more and more people are starting to bring out smaller books. It seems like a good trend to me. Yeah, people don't have time to read anymore. But let's start out with the definition of neoliberal. I think most people most people misunderstand what that means.
Yeah, and it's used in a lot of different ways too. So it's understandable that people are confused by it. Some people think that it's, well, we have neoconservatives and therefore neoliberal must be somehow the equivalent of that. But I'm using neoliberalism to refer to a specific set of financial global trade policies that were put into effect in the 1970s and 80s, basically to try to impose conditions of market economy and austerity politics globally through global financial institutions that are really not democratically accountable.
So principally the World Bank, right?
Like the World Bank, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, and the way that these global institutions have non-democratically imposed a set of not only economic but also political practices and forced them on governments around the world. So neoliberalism is then often understood as just those purely kind of managerial, technical, neutral economic policies. And what I'm wanting to argue is that there are a set of cultural politics that go along with those, and that if we want to have a progressive, an effective progressive politics that takes on the coerciveness and inequality of neoliberal policies, that we need to understand fully how much culture and identity, what so-called identity politics, are integrated into what are really promoted as neutral managerial economic policies.
And what are those?
The cultural politics. Well, here, let me just focus domestically on the U.S., which is what people may be the most familiar with, and that is neoliberal policies domestically tended to rely on the kind of culture war policies during the 1980s and into about the mid-90s. Although they tended to be responded to as if they were entirely separate. The culture wars, attacks on feminism and racial equality and various kinds of sexual politics, were understood as somehow coming from a kind of moral conservatism that was separable from the economic goals of neoliberalism domestically. But in fact, if you really look closely, you can see that they're deeply intertwined through things like tax policy. So I use an example in The Twilight of Equality of an attack of apparently moral conservatives on a women's studies conference at SUNY New Paltz in 1998. And they were attacked for having lesbian-themed panels at a women's studies conference in what was really sort of classic culture wars sorts of rhetoric. But in fact, the people who led that attack were members of an organization called Change New York in New York State, which is made up primarily of the CEOs of major corporations here, who were looking to get tax reductions for their in corporate taxes, but we're also looking to downsize public institutions in order to cut the public tab and also kind of shrink the spaces for real democratic public life. So there are attacks on the universities here in New York. We're not all that popular. There is some significant support for public higher education in New York. They used this kind of moral attack on a women's studies conference and on a lesbian-themed panels in order to undercut support for the university system, in order to make it easier to take over, do some downsizing, get rid of unruly faculty, do some centralizing of the administration here. So if you look really closely at what happened there, you see that the economic goals of neoliberalism, which is to privatize public institutions and shrink the spaces for real democracy, that was part and parcel of what was a kind of moralizing attack. Though the newspapers, the mainstream press, tended not to see that connection. It was only the Village Voice, really, that really did a chart showing what the connections were between the people who had led the attack on the conference and the CEOs who were looking for tax reductions from the Republican administration here. So I'm trying to argue that progressives need to see the way in which these things are connected and not make a kind of disabling split between economic issues on the one hand and so-called identity politics or cultural issues on the other, which a lot of progressives tend to do. And I think it's ultimately dramatically disabling of our ability to really address the goals and projects of neoliberal policies, not only domestically but globally.
Right. We're speaking with Lisa Dugan, right?
Yes.
Lisa Dugan, an author of The Twilight of Equality. Lisa, why use the word neoliberalism instead of simply conservatism or the conservative agenda?
That's a very good question, Tom. And that's because I think here in the United States, we get very much caught up in what appears to be a battle between conservatives on the one hand and liberals on the other, the Republican Party versus the Democratic Party. And this framing for what the alternative is it obscures the ways in which the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are overlapping and quite similar. And it also tends to obscure or make much less visible the ways in which we need to promote a politics that is critical of both conservative and domestic liberal politics insofar as they promote a kind of neoliberal, anti-democratic or inegalitarian politics worldwide. I think that's a hard thing to grasp because the importance, what's at stake in the battle between conservative and liberal politics within the United States, those stakes are so real that sometimes it's very difficult to see that actually the amount of overlap there was between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration in terms of global policies and some domestic policies as well.
It was Bill Clinton that brought us the World Trade Organization, that signed GATT and NAFTA, and also signed
welfare reform and supported the Defense of Marriage Act and on and on.
Yeah, and
Although the Clinton administration looks a little good in some ways right this minute, doesn't it, by comparison to what we're living with now.
In retrospect, yes,
right.
For all their failings. But nonetheless, I mean, there really was this theme. I still actually have a clipping of a Wall Street Journal article from the week before the NAFTA vote.
Yes.
Where it was about Bill Clinton had been out with Teddy Kennedy in Nantucket Sound, and he climbed up to the top mast of a ship and dove 30 feet into the water, and William Luchtenberg, a presidential historian, says, you know, this guy's a riverboat gambler. He's got to live on the edge. And the whole point of the article was everybody's wondering why is he staking his presidency on something that the polls show more than half of Americans oppose.
Yeah.
And of the Americans, we even understand what the issue was.
Yeah.
And he's so aggressively going after this thing. He's making late night phone calls, you know.
Yeah.
And they finally pulled this thing out of the hat at a lame duck session at Christmas break.
And he understood
break.
This to be one of the major achievements of his administration.
Right. And the consequence has been that
very dismal.
You know,
Very dismal.
The devastation of the American economy.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that becomes invisible when we focus our political vision on the battle between Democrats and Republicans and don't understand, actually, that Clinton deeply supported the project of neoliberalism in the United States and globally. It was a softer, kinder neoliberalism than the one that the George Bush administration supports, but it was nonetheless the goals of supporting an anti-democratic and inegalitarian trade financial policies around the world were at the core of what the Clinton administration was doing.
Yeah, this is the new Democrats, and in England, the new Labor.
Yeah,
and the DLC, it seems to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. The DLC is really the cheerleaders for this bunch.
Well, yeah, the DLC really grabbed onto neoliberal politics. You know, framed as this kind of third way, the rhetoric of third way, which the New Labour Party in Great Britain has also grabbed onto. So-called third way politics, supposedly between conservative on the one side and an outdated kind of liberal progressivism on the other side. When what it is the DLC in the United States really took the lead in producing a kind of ideological argument for neoliberalism, for neoliberal policies in the United States, and were highly successful at it, actually in some ways more successful than the Republicans have been in obfuscating the primary goals of the economic policies that administration supported. And so thinking about neoliberalism and understanding neoliberalism as a specific set of policies and also as a political and cultural agenda, I think that clarifies our ability to see, for instance, what the Clinton and Bush administrations have in common rather than being completely, in a way, sidelined by understanding what the differences have been.
And going back largely to the Reagan administration, where this really
began. Thatcher in Great Britain. Yes, which is the launching of neoliberalism at the domestic level happened with around just before and during 1980 in the U.S. and in Great Britain. And those policies have had the effect of creating the greatest inequality in global history, both in the United States and globally. Since the implementation of neoliberal policies, the concentration of wealth has gotten more and more steep and unequal every decade since.
Yeah, and this is ultimately extremely destructive to democracy. We're talking with Lisa Dugan, who is the author of The Twilight of Equality, Neoliberalism, Cultural Politics, and the Attack on Democracy. She's an associate professor of American Studies and History at New York University. And Lisa, when we come back from this break, I'd like you to just get a little bit more into this whole idea of the cultural politics of the right and how they've been luring in traditional blue-collar progressives to their side and that there really is an economic agenda to that. And I want to ask you, what can we do about this in the remaining 5 minutes or so that we'll have to talk about this? So if you can hold on over this break, we will be back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
This is incredible. People everywhere are discovering they have 24 hours to live. With one pill a day, that's 24 hours to live without frequent heartburn. Yes, it's possible with Prilosec OTC. One pill a day can relieve heartburn for 24 hours. Holy moly, you could have zero heartburn. So, folks, get out there, because without frequent heartburn, you could have 24 hours to live it up.
One pill a day, 24 hours, zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call, answer all your questions, and we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take a Leave Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day. Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, Bartkop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, for people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I know it's my duty to spend and to buy, to prove to Bin Laden I'll shop till I die. I'm a world-class consumer, I'm sure of my role. I vote with my dollars for corporate control. I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war. And the American flags on the counter for sale were all made in China by prisoners in jail.
Welcome back to the Vast Radical Middle Conspiracy. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Lisa Dugan, an associate professor of American Studies and History at New York University, author of The Twilight of Equality: Neoliberalism, Cultural Politics, and the Attack on Democracy. Lisa, you were suggesting, in the previous hour, actually, I was ranting about corporations having human rights. Santa Clara County decision that turns out, actually, the headnote contradicts the decision itself, and the Supreme Court never actually ruled that corporations have human rights, but the clerk of the court said so. But in any case, and that's been, you know, leading this whole disintegration that we've been seeing, particularly since Reagan's era and enthroning corporations in high places. And that's a large part of the neoliberal agenda. And I think most people get that, or at least those who listen to programs like this, you know, they've kind of figured that out. But the idea that aspect of what you're referring to, and anybody in Europe or in Canada would immediately recognize neoliberalism, as neoliberalism.
Yes.
What I refer to
Latin
as
Latin America.
Right, yeah,
yes.
And exactly. What I refer to as the conservative agenda, it's, you know, it's, I think it's more broadly understood in those terms, although I agree with you, it's somewhat ambiguous, but nonetheless, most people think of it as there's a cleaving, that on the one hand, there's the economic agenda of the conservatives or the neoliberals, which is to say, okay, you know, more money to the rich and throne corporations in power and all that. Yeah. And on the other hand, there's these wedge issues. There's this kind of pandering to individual fringe groups, not as in lunatic fringe, but as in, you know, just special interest groups, the anti-abortion folks and the anti-homosexuality folks and the pro-prayer and, you know, and that those really are two completely separate things, and that they're really doing the latter to get enough votes so that they can promote the agenda of the former. That seems to be conventional wisdom, but you're suggesting that there's actually
a synthesis
between these two.
They're more connected than that. That in fact the attacks, say, on abortion rights or on affirmative action or the anti-gay attacks are actually part and parcel of trying to downsize and undermine public democratic debate and democratic institutions, arts institutions, higher education institutions, a whole variety of institutions that are sites for real democratic debate. So there's an attempt to sort of rein them in, cut them down, and to shrink their scope of operations. But actually, I think neoliberal politics right now has two cultural politics that seem to be operating at loggerheads, but that in fact intersect also in some very weird but useful ways for the neoliberal agenda. And one are these the culture wars kinds of attacks, which are used, as I just said, to downsize institutions. But there is as well a kind of emergent phony equality politics as well. You know, where you see the sort of Benetton ad style tableau at the last Republican convention, the putting Condoleezza Rice or Colin Powell out front to show that black folks are included in this administration. All of the attempts to try to have a kind of phony inclusiveness that actually there is no redistribution of money or power or cultural resources according to race or gender or sexuality that's really going on, but there is an attempt to appear in some way as kind of inclusive, and this is both in the interests of sort of, you know, corporate globalism and in the interests of sort of party politics. But this rhetoric of faux equality, I think, is actually highly dangerous in that I think some very narrowly focused equality groups are sometimes buying into it or accepting it as being the real thing. And that's very, very dangerous. I think it actually could produce a realignment of politics in the United States as destructive as the Southern strategy was.
And it seems to be. Lisa, that music means we've got to take a break. If you can hold on for another just a few more minutes, I'd like to continue this conversation.
Okay.
Great. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Is your home making you sick? A Canadian author recommends a checkup. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Angela Hobbs' excitement about her newly remodeled home in Ontario soon turned into frustration. The teacher and mother of two began to feel weak and confused, and at times she could barely get out of bed. 30 doctors could not figure out what was ailing Hobbs, but she noticed that she felt better when she was away from home. That led her to diagnose her own problem, a sick house. Hobbs defines a sick house as one where a combination of electromagnetic fields, chemicals, molds, and other toxins negatively affect at least one of the people living there. And she's written a book about it called The Sick House Survival Guide. It describes her experience with environmental illness and the actions she took to overcome it. Tom says her first order of business was to stop using chemical cleaners. She says we really don't know how household chemicals affect us, especially in combination with each other. She also got rid of unnecessary electrical devices which create electromagnetic fields in the home. Hobbs says the typical house is now buzzing with electricity, with electronic devices in every room, each of which gives off an electromagnetic field. Studies on electromagnetic effects on the human body are inconclusive, but Hobbs says it's wise to err on the safe side and limit your exposure to electrical devices and power sources. She shuts down unneeded circuits at night, especially in the bedrooms. Hobbs says if you're experiencing fatigue, confusion, or other symptoms that can't be explained, you should look at your home as a possible source of your illness. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune in to the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's turn up our nose at the World Court of Law, for justice was never the point of this war. We're bombing to stop future terrorist acts. Can't you tell a war from a terror attack? I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war. And the American flag's on the counter for sale. We're all made in China by prisoners in jail.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. We're speaking with Lisa Dugan this hour, an associate professor of American Studies and History at New York University and author of The Twilight of Equality, Neoliberalism, Cultural Politics, and the Attack on Democracy. Lisa, let's talk for just a second about these wedge issues and just to... What I'd like our listeners to carry away from this are a few sentences or a frame, an understanding, a perspective, a vision, a story, however you want to define it, that would allow them to explain to somebody else that who might not understand these things that the so-called that the righteous moral issues that as the right frames them are really anti-institutional attacks.
Yes.
They're really attempts to destroy the institutions that support democracy in America.
Yes.
And number one, and number two, what can we do about this?
Well, on the what can we do about it frame, I feel very strongly that what we need to do is promote a kind of progressive politics that does not marginalize the issues of the wedge issues, the issues of race and gender and sexuality, that the right, seemingly it's just the right wing, but actually it's a much broader set of interests promote. That when we put together progressive politics that emphasizes economic issues, which are, of course, core and central, but that tends to marginalize or treat as trivial issues of race and gender, that step it actually disables rather than unifies us, because it disallows us from sort of seeing the ways in which these issues are connected and which we all have an interest in maintaining a broad public arena for debate. Well, take, for instance, the conference that I mentioned at SUNY New Paltz that got attacked by moral conservatives for the lesbian panel that was there. Well, people who are advocates for public education tended not to comment on that because they thought this was an issue of lesbian rights and not really something they needed to speak about.
Or like the Mapplethorpe exhibits.
Right. When in fact, you know, the corporate CEOs who were generating that attack were then using it to downsize and attack SUNY and CUNY and public institutions of higher education in New York. So it was incredibly short-sighted for political progressives not to understand that these issues are connected and that we all need to get in there and support each other and make a kind of interactive, broad, progressive political voice around a whole range of these issues and not to treat some of them as somehow expendable.
Yeah, now I get it, although it still sounds a little abstract. What specifically would you suggest people do?
That progressive, that identity-based organizations really address themselves to issues of political economy, and that progressive economic politics address themselves aggressively to educate themselves and learn something about how these kinds of wedge political issues work. So that we...
So, I'm sorry.
When you say concrete, I'm not entirely sure...
Well, for example, are you suggesting that NARAL or NOW or one of these organizations that is perceived as a special interest group, or the ACLU, or that is perceived as a single issue or special interest organization that has this perception of a moral position or an issue, that they should begin speaking out about how the other side of their position is being exploited for economic gain by your neoliberals, my conservatives,
and also that they themselves need to address issues of the embedded of the political economy and how it affects, you know, the issue that they are organizing around, because some of the identity-based groups tend to be moving rightward almost into the neoliberal camp by ignoring issues of the political economy and dealing only very narrowly with a single issue of inclusion, that actually can move those groups very far rightward to where they're supporting the HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, the largest gay rights organization in the country, endorsed Al D'Amato, an anti-abortion Republican thug, for the U.S. Senate seat in 1998 in New York State. So a so-called progressive organization supporting an anti-abortion Republican politician, that could only happen when you've narrowed the issue so far that his position on one question determined their endorsement. They're no longer a progressive organization when they do things like that.
And yet, on the other hand, if Al D'Amato's opponent was anti-gay rights and he was pro-gay rights, and what
he was
what kind
pro-gay
of
rights,
it
was Charles Schumer was his opponent, who was a pro-gay rights, but they decided to go with incumbency at that point, taking a very narrow kind of lobbyist's view of what the very narrow interest of this particular constituency was. So both progressive organizations that tend to focus only on economic issues need to speak out about the way that cultural politics are related to their goals. So too do the cultural and identity politics organizations need to look in a broader way at the relationship among different kinds of issues and to take a broader view. Otherwise, we don't have an effective political opposition in this country.
Right. So the bottom line is that there actually is a culture war, as it were, going on, that it's not just about
it's not only about so-called culture, that the economy, that economic distribution of resources, material as well as cultural and political, are at stake in those debates as well.
Great. Lisa, one last question. Thank you for letting me keep dragging you along with one more question here, but I find this fascinating. You are the first person that I've read or spoken with who is so clearly tying these things together. I mean, you know, you read progressive websites ad infinitum, other authors. Everybody seems to be cleaving these two issues, and you're bringing them together. Are there other voices out there? Are there institutions? Are there organizations that get it?
There are, actually. There are. There is both sort of scholarship, and there are also activist organizations that do get it. They tend to be fairly local or fairly confined to small audiences and constituencies. And that's who I learn from and am hoping to, in some way, you know, expand the horizons for. There's an organization here in New York City, for instance, called the Audre Lorde Project. That is an advocacy organization for people of color who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and they are always connecting the economic and the cultural issues that affect people in a very broad way.
Do you know of any national organizations that are doing this?
National organizations that are doing that. It tends to be mostly a kind of network of more local organizations who are making those kind of connections. When you look at national organizations like the Green Party, for instance, you know, sadly in the Ralph Nader campaign, it was very disappointing that they did not do that. That, in fact, Ralph Nader on a number of occasions made trivializing, marginalizing remarks about abortion politics or gay politics as being really of secondary interest. So that was really disappointing, and I'm hoping that that people who have an interest in, you know, alternative progressive politics outside the neoliberal two-party system will not engage in that kind of ranking of issues, and instead understand that all of these things are related, and that we all have something at stake in trying to make them speak to each other instead of from separate locations.
Very well said. Lisa Dugan, thank you very much for being on the program today. Her book, The Twilight of Equality, Neoliberalism, Cultural Politics, and the Attack on Democracy. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, back to the... It's like a segue out of a topic, but the threads pulling together here and all these things. For example, Robert Novak. Here, this November 13th, this is a Buzz Flash reader commentary, actually, by Kathleen Sullivan. Senator Weicker, somebody went back and looked at the White House, at the tapes of the transcripts of the Senate Select Committee hearings on presidential campaign activities. These were those of you who are old enough to remember old Senator Sam Ervin? He's just an amazing guy. He's going on back in June 12, 1973, and he says he's interrogating Herbert Porter, who was part of the committee to reelect the president, CREEP, Richard Nixon's Dirty Tricks operation. And Porter says, well, we got these photographs or negatives, the intra-office memos from Senator Muskie's campaign headquarters. And what's he going to do with them? He says, we're going to send them to Evans and Novak. They're going to leak them out. And then he's interviewing John Haldeman on August 1st, 1973. And Haldeman has written a memo. He says, we need to get our people to put out a story on the foreign or communist money that was used in support of demonstrations against the president in 1972, against Nixon. And he says, this is a good counteroffensive to be developed. Well, how are they going to get that out? We could let Evans and Novak put it out. Bob Novak apparently has an interesting history. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. Jason in Philadelphia is on the line. Hey, Jason, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great, but I'll get better.
I wanted to see if you saw the New York Times article today on the deal on 9/11 briefings, let White House edit papers.
Yeah, I did. In fact, I've got it here in the stack someplace, that basically the White House has said to the 9/11 Commission, okay, we'll let you see some of the presidential papers. You don't have to sue us. However, we get to edit them before you look at them.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line of it, right?
And it also says that four of the 11 members of the board will be chosen to review the documents.
Right, and it's a bipartisan board. It's 50-50 Democrats and Republicans, so
right.
Yes, who will get chosen.
And I'm sure, I'm sure. Do you think is there going to be any? Do you think there's any chance that any Democrats are going to get to see these documents when only four are going to be chosen?
No, Jason. This administration, George Bush came into office. Robert Reich, I believe it was on this program. Maybe it wasn't him. We had on this program one of the senior administration officials who was involved in the handoff of the information to Condoleezza Rice when Bush took office and said, "Your number one issue is going to be Osama bin Laden, and here's this information, and they're planning these terrorist attacks, and they've already hit the World Trade Center once, and you got to do something about it." And the Bush administration said, forget that. We're going to work on tax breaks for the rich. It's a very small if the information about what the Bush administration knew about 9/11 were to ever come out, it would be so politically destructive that I don't think the Bush administration would survive it. And that's why they have struggled for 3 years now to keep to prevent both the House and Senate committees and now this independent commission from ever seeing any of these paperwork, any of this paperwork, any of these notes, totally keep them out of the loop. And now this commission, their venue expires May 5th or something like May 15th,
right.
And they're stalling and stalling and stalling and filtering and filtering and filtering, and maybe after the 2004 election something may come out, particularly if Democrats take back the House and Senate, or if they become if they take the presidency. But I'm not expecting there to be any daylight on this thing before November of 2004. Jason, thanks for calling and bringing this up. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Tim in Hartford has some thoughts on Lisa's comments. Hey, Tim, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program.
I really enjoyed the author till almost the very end when, I think she is getting the connection that does need to be made, but she made some kind of outlandish remarks. She was talking about particularly the Green Party and Ralph Nader's making trivializing remarks. I think what she's referring to was something that happened in 96 in his first initial very small campaign when he did say to the New York Times I can't think of that conservative author that he did an interview that he didn't really want to get into gonadal politics. And I think actually that was, something that was at the time talking about campaign finance reform, NAFTA, got all the very incredibly important issues that he didn't feel very strongly about, but the Green Party and Ralph Nader in particular in the 2000 campaign did not trivialize these issues, did make as many connections as possible to as many people as they could. I personally saw him address gay reporters, witnessed him campaigning in black communities, all those kinds of things that I think this author simply did not understand.
What Lisa was saying is that can be done one of two ways. It can be done, hey, I understand your issue and I'm with you, and I'm against those guys who are bashing you. Or it can be done from the position of, hey, I understand your issue and I'm with you or I'm not, depending on what whatever my thoughts are on it. However, your issue ultimately is an economic issue and it's being exploited for financial gain and you don't realize it, neither does anybody else.
Well, I think certainly Ralph Nader was probably the only candidate who did that kind of thing, talking about redlining,
it in all the areas where it was obviously economic. But she's her point, and
but
I mean,
no, he did say that people, for example, that gays should be allowed to be married. All those kinds of issues he did address, and she just didn't understand it.
Oh, good on him. Thanks for setting the record straight, Tim. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Gordon in San Francisco. Hang on. We'll pick up your call right after this break. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the True People's Radio.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil. The nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold. Medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
this
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Did you know that anti-Iraq war veterans were pulled from a Veterans Day parade? Amazing story. I'll tell you about it in the next hour. Gordon in San Francisco is on the line. Hey, Gordon, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. We've got about 3 minutes left here.
Thank you very much. Listen, last hour you had a lady wondering about what Howard Dean's positions were on campaign finance. Mm-hmm. There's a recent quote by him on the front page of bartcop.com, so she can look at that, about what Bush is doing. Anyway, Tom, I wanted to ask you about... did you ever read The Corruption of American Politics by Elizabeth Drew?
I did not.
Oh, okay. It's a fascinating, fascinating book. She wrote it in 99. It's in paperback now. Again, it's called The Corruption of American Politics by Elizabeth Drew. Mm-hmm. And she demonstrates a lot of things in the book. Power politics have changed. Politics have changed over the past 25 years. The alterations in the nature of the major institutions, the decline in the quality of the politicians themselves. So she gets into all of that, but a huge part of the book has to do with campaign finance, the McCain-Feingold bill, and how that was defeated. You know, some of the major provisions...
How it was eviscerated, you mean?
What's that?
How it was eviscerated. It was disemboweled.
Right, and one of the major provisions of that bill was the curbs on these phony issue ads, the abolition of soft money, and how mostly the Republicans were saying that that would violate the First Amendment's protection of free speech.
Right,
and she demonstrates how that is a bogus argument. And in the very last chapter, it's called "Reason for Hope." And she offers some, you know, suggestions about what can be done. You know, the sweeping reform in 74 after what Nixon has done, after what Nixon did.
We're out of time here, Gordon.
There was major campaign finance reform. Well, she demonstrates how almost all of those provisions passed then have been cut up.
Yeah, we got to get back to it. Gordon, thank you for the call. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Good point. Corruption of American Politics by Elizabeth Drew. I also wrote about this in my book, Unequal Protection, at the risk of it sounding like a shameless plug here. Anyhow, thanks for the call, Gordon. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Windstorms gusting to more than 70 miles per hour swept across the Midwest and the East, knocking out power to more than 1.4 million customers and bringing rain and flooding across a wide swath of North America. A motorist who drove past a roadblock was swept away by a creek in West Virginia, and two people were killed in separate weather-related accidents in New York, including one in which a tree fell on a vehicle. A Virginia teenager was seriously injured when a tree fell on her as she waited for a school bus on Wednesday. Michigan and Ohio were the hardest hit by the power outages, with about 375,000 customers affected in each state. The majority had electricity restored by late Thursday. The American general leading military efforts in Iraq will reestablish his headquarters in Qatar, reflecting what he described as a sense of urgency in the face of increasing attacks on U.S. and allied troops there. General John Abizade, head of U.S. Central Command, said resistance forces in Iraq number no more than 5,000, but are showing new levels of coordination. U.S. officials have previously expressed uncertainty over the number and nature of the resistance forces, which have carried out increasingly bold and deadly attacks on American and allied troops and other targets. On Wednesday, suicide bombers devastated an Italian military base in Nasiriya, killing at least 18 Italians. Iran warned on Thursday of unpredictable consequences if the UN watchdog finds it in breach of a global pact against atomic weapons, as Washington accused the United Nations of playing down evidence Iran wants a bomb. The United States wants the board to declare Iran in violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which could trigger economic sanctions. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA said, "I hope we do not reach such a stage, because then things could get very easily out of control, and then it could lead to unpredictable consequences." More after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
Highway police in Madrid, Spain, stopped a driver they believed was using his cell phone while driving, but the driver maintained he was just scratching his ear. The driver showed the two officers that the last call from his phone went out the night before. The duo huddled, then came back and fined him $70 anyway. The charge they leveled against the motorist? Driving while holding his ear with his right hand in a permanent fashion. Spain's new Don't Scratch and Drive campaign kicks off next week. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
We'll be back with more music, but first, a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Is anything going to be real in our world, or is everything to be simulated reality, created by profit-seeking corporations? Already we have Disneyland's plastic imitations of quaint European villages. We have dairy creamers that contain no cream and don't come from dairies. We have pets that are not actual animals but pre-programmed robots. We have kids playing baseball on handheld computers instead of out on a baseball field. And now, even the small sensory joys in our lives are no longer real, but instead are synthetic replications. Take the pleasure of buying a new car and inhaling that new car smell. Is it real, or is it nuance? Cadillac has revealed that it now imbues each of its vehicles with an artificial scent called Nuance that was created in a chemistry lab by a company that specializes in, quote, aroma quality management. Leather seats? No need to go to that expense, for the company can make a plastic covering that, it claims, feels and smells more like leather than leather. That's only the start of fake fragrances in automobiles. An executive of this smell-simulating company says, "We believe there is growth potential in people wanting to be in this big burly SUV with rich walnut, and they want it to smell like wood." So, now they've got a wood perfume for SUVs, which is necessary since even real wood paneling is lacquered and doesn't have an actual wood smell. Then there's a car's sound. Remember the great sensual rumble of old Fords? Well, now they're back. Not for real, but thanks to an artificial sound system. Ford used computers and focus groups to come up with a classic rumbling sound, and then it hired a company to install a system of resonators, so Ford's new pickup trucks artificially rumble like an old V8. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the brave new world of marketing, no need to experience reality, just fake it.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day. On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast. Also, three different internet stations, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and radiopower.org. You can find archives of the program at whiterosesociety.org. You can track it all down at tomhartman.com, which will also give you a link to our live chat room, where right now we got a whole bunch of folks carrying on a conversation of fascinating stuff here. It's I will leave that to them. And let them keep their secrets, and you can drop in and find out what's going on. We started out the 3 hours of this program. We started out 2 hours ago talking about corporations as persons, about the 1886 Santa Clara decision, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, the fact that the head note says that the court had ruled that corporations were persons, but the ruling, the decision itself, actually doesn't say that. In fact, it says the opposite. It says that the court did not rule on the constitutional issue. And over time, how this has been grown to the point where corporations have risen up, claimed human rights, that great club that the founders and the framers of the Constitution gave to we, the people, so that we could push back government should it ever become oppressive. And corporations took this mighty club of human rights, of the Bill of Rights, and began to systematically go at our government in a way that ultimately has led to, some would say, a corporate takeover. CEOs now, as president and vice president of our government. But what are the consequences of this sort of thing at the human level, of corporations having such extraordinary rights? That, you know, the original idea of the founders, that for 7,000 years, since Gilgamesh rose up and said, you know, the first king, the first theocratic king, and said that rights were at the top and distributed down to the people, and we had warlord king, you know, Jefferson's three tyrannies, warlord kings, theocrats, theocratic popes, and rule by the rich, feudal lords. In each case, they held rights and they distributed privileges down to the people. And the founders and framers said, no, let's reverse the equation. We, the people, will hold the rights and we will distribute privileges to our institutions, whether they're governments, whether they're corporations, whether they're unions, whether they're guilds, whatever kind of organization it is, it will have privileges. And now we find this being turned on its head. Today we have Star Kelso, an attorney representing Mike Edmondson, on the program. And rather than giving you the whole background, I'll have Star do it. Star, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Tell us about Mike Edmondson. First of all, just a short bio of you, and then let's get into the story of Mike Edmondson.
Well, a short bio of me is that I would classify myself as a person who believed in many stories and and hand-me-downs and the work hard, get ahead, and the corporate idealism until it got to the point where it was either continue on in the corporate structure or else refuse to take unethical actions that I was directed to do by my corporate employers. And that's quite a line that is drawn in the sand. You go from making a nice living, providing for your family, to representing real people and fighting in the war. And so my conscience was such that I refused to do the unethical actions. Essentially, 8 years ago, took my firm and discarded us, as they do so many employees and rights today. And so pretty much for the last 8 years, I've been representing those people who have legitimate causes, not only against corporations, but state and local governments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And Star Kelso, and Star, you are representing a fellow by the name of Mike Edmondson.
Yeah.
Who used to work with a lumber company. Tell us the story of Mike.
Tom, are you familiar with Norman Rockwell's paintings at the end of World War II, The Four Freedoms?
In fact, a friend of mine was a model for one of them.
Really?
She was the little girl in some of his early pictures, yeah.
Wow.
He lived here in Vermont.
Right. And Mike Edmondson looks exactly like the person in Norman Rockwell's painting of the freedom of speech. It shows a blue-collar worker standing up in a room of people, voicing his opinion, and people looking up at him. And that was distributed by air on the lines in World War II, so that as propaganda, so people would see what the United States was about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Mike Edmondson to a T. Mike Edmondson worked for a small, by standards of nation standards, but a large by Central Idaho standards sawmill. He started out as a common laborer, worked there for 22 years, and finally elevated himself up to a supervisor. In the course of that work, he lost his left thumb. He ruined his lungs fighting a fire in the sawmill. And as Mike will tell you, he said he gave 200% for, he refers to it as my company. And the reason he refers to it as my company is because he had invested in that, and he believed that if he invested in that company, then he would be able to work there, and they would both.
You mean invested financially?
No, just in his work.
He had invested his life in that company.
He invested his life in that community, yeah. Absolutely. Mike was a community leader. In this, it's a non-incorporated area. He was a leader of the nonprofit corporation that handled the parks and the laboratories and the lights and all that for the community. And in 1995, he was named Idaho's very first GEM citizen for his community involvement.
Right. Okay, so we've got it. He's a good guy. What happened?
There was a bulletin posted on the bulletin board at the Shear Lumber Mill announcing a meeting of a group named Save Elk City, announcing a meeting, a public meeting, to discuss issues affecting Elk City, and that's the name of the town where Mike lives.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the meeting. At the meeting, Mike made no comments on any issues and formed no opinions. A few days later, the company manager stationed at a different location determined to fire Mike Edmondson for attending that public meeting. And that's not a guess. The most critical fact about this case is that is what the company manager testified to under oath. That was the reason he fired him.
Okay, so he goes to a meeting and the company manager says, okay, you're out of here.
You're fired.
And yeah, you're fired. And now the folks on the, you know, the at-will and right-to-work side of this, the corporate side of this, would say, well, you know, the First Amendment of the Constitution guarantees the right to free speech, guarantees the right to assembly, but it essentially guarantees that the government won't inhibit it. It doesn't say that a corporation can't inhibit it. And what's your position? How do you respond to that?
Well, and that's a good point, but you respond to that because The classic cases evolve from the civil rights days when people would enter into real estate contracts on subdivisions where they would all agree that they would not sell any property to people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And those agreements amongst those people who originally signed them were legal as between themselves. However,
right,
but
those were held together by the contracts clause of the Constitution.
However, as soon as one of the members of that subdivision wanted to sell that property to a person of color, and the other people in the group objected and went to court to enforce it, that clause in the contract, then it becomes an action of the state that enforces that inappropriate clause, and therefore it's the action of the Supreme Court of that particular state that violates the Constitution, because they are enforcing an unenforceable clause that violates the Constitution.
Yeah, now let me restate this and see if I got this right.
Sure.
What you're saying is that if... Oh boy! If the courts are being used to enforce a contract, a seemingly legal contract, but the contract contains something that is illegal, then the courts are supporting something that's illegal, and therefore that contract can be declared null and void, right?
Correct. Okay. Very succinctly said. Thank you.
Okay. So he. Did he have a contract with his employer that
No.
said that he that was there? Is there an implied contract in the state of Idaho that says that we can control whether or not you go to a meeting?
No, it's just the general at-will doctrine that says that we can fire any employee at any time for any reason, good or bad, or no reason, so long as it doesn't violate public policy.
Right.
So from our perspective, and I think from many folks' perspective,
this is wrong.
I can think of no other public policy stronger than free speech and the right of association.
Uh-huh. Okay. Even though the freedom of speech and right of association is guaranteed, I guess the question then becomes, and we'll have to get into this after the break here, but the question is, Is it that our right of free speech and association is guaranteed, or is it that the power of the government to prevent it is limited? But anyhow, we're talking to Sarah Kelso, the attorney representing Mike Edmondson, who got fired for attending a public meeting. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cassie, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them.
They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free, 1-800-205-7067, or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067, or populist.com, or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy? Mm-hmm.
Fan ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fan ji la.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. For the healing. Go on with the dreamers.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Back in January of 1941, Franklin Roosevelt addressed the nation, put forth what he called the four essential freedoms, the four freedoms that people all over the world were entitled to. His first, and the one that the founders and the framers of the Constitution of the United States also felt was the first, was as follows.
The first is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world.
Franklin Roosevelt, January 1941. The root of the at-will doctrine that an employer holds an employee at will, that is, they can dismiss them for whatever reason they want, is generally found in English common law. It was inserted into American common law by judges in the 19th century. The New Deal started challenging these at-will rules regarding union activity. But in the 1960s, civil rights laws were used to water down the at-will rules. And in 2002, the Sarbanes-Oxley was passed to protect whistleblowers, although this administration has been attacking this thing. And we have there's a real significant debate here. I think a debate of what kind of nation do we want to live in? Do we share the vision that Roosevelt articulated, that freedom of speech is a critical and essential human right, and that it supersedes, for example, the contract right to have a job, or not? Do we want to live in a feudal state where corporations run the show and just say, well, that's how it is? And the Taft-Hartley Act, 1947, gave states the ability to enact right-to-work laws. In other words, the beginning of the taking apart unions, so employees could actually get the benefits of being in a union without actually joining one. It gave more leverage to the employers when negotiating with unions. Excludes supervisors and independent contractors in its definition of employee. And, of course, this has been expanded. Now the administration wants to expand it even further. And now, in just after this next break, we'll talk about how the Supreme Court has elevated commercial speech up to the same level as political speech. Now, in truly bizarre this is getting, we have on the phone Star Kelso, who's the attorney representing Mike Edmondson, a fellow who was fired for simply attending a meeting, not even speaking out. Star, tell us, you know, just in a tight nutshell, what is wrong with this? What is wrong with a company firing an individual for just attending a meeting or for any reason?
Well, I think the dissent and the opinion of the Idaho Supreme Court sums it up very nicely. Justice Kidwell stated that the decision invites employers to squash the association, speech, and debate so necessary to our system of government. Mm-hmm. Essentially, if we don't have free speech, free association, away from the workplace, at the hours that we're not at work, we don't have a participatory government.
The issue here is that this guy was nailed for doing something that his employer didn't like when he wasn't at work. I mean, if he had been at work and he had shouted something to a supervisor, the supervisor could fire him for that legitimately, and you would probably defend the supervisor for that. But he wasn't even at work when this happened.
Even at work, right.
That's the kind of linchpin
here.
Yeah. So, and now in a 4-1 decision, the Idaho Supreme Court has upheld the right of the employer to fire this guy for going to a meeting on his own time. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. It's outrageous.
Are you going to take this to the United States Supreme Court?
We are working on it at the very moment. Getting a petition for a writ of certiorari to the U.S. Supreme Court, as you know, Tom, is like finding a needle in a haystack, proverbially. They take whatever cases they want. And
it's a challenge. It's a tough
real
one.
Challenge. But this is a fundamental issue to our country.
Yeah, I agree. Star Kelso, we're speaking with Star. If you can stick around for just another couple minutes right after this break, I'd like you to help us understand the difference between at-will rules and just cause. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Is your home making you sick? A Canadian author recommends a checkup. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio.
Angela Hobbs' excitement about her newly remodeled home in Ontario soon turned into frustration. The teacher and mother of two began to feel weak and confused, and at times she could barely get out of bed. 30 doctors could not figure out what was ailing Hobbs, but she noticed that she felt better when she was away from home. That led her to diagnose her own problem, a sick house. Hobbs defines a sick house as one where a combination of electromagnetic fields, chemicals, molds, and other toxins negatively affect at least one of the people living there. And she's written a book about it called The Sick House Survival Guide. It describes her experience with environmental illness and the actions she took to overcome it. Hobbs says her first order of business was to stop using chemical cleaners. She says we really don't know how household chemicals affect us, especially in combination with each other. She also got rid of unnecessary electrical devices, which create electromagnetic fields in the home. Hobbs says the typical house is now buzzing with electricity, with electronic devices in every room, each of which gives off an electromagnetic field. Studies on electromagnetic effects on the human body are inconclusive. But Hobbs says it's wise to err on the safe side and limit your exposure to electrical devices and power sources. She shuts down unneeded circuits at night, especially in the bedrooms. Hobbs says if you're experiencing fatigue, confusion, or other symptoms that can't be explained, you should look at your home as a possible source of your illness. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
President, thanks to Captain Jingo for that suggestion. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. We're speaking with Star Kelso, the attorney representing Mike Edmondson, who got canned for, on his own time, attending a meeting that he didn't even do anything at. I mean, he just showed up. In fact, the bulletin board, the announcement was in the company bulletin board. About this thing. Recent Supreme Court rulings. Now, the United States Supreme Court has suggested, tobacco companies have argued before the United States Supreme Court that they should have free speech rights for their advertising. Telemarketers are vying for the same kind of protection to make unsolicited phone calls. Nike, in the Caskey versus Nike case that we covered
pretty thoroughly here on this program earlier in the year. Went before the Supreme Court, was argued in April and kicked back out in June. In fact, I participated in one of the amicus briefs in this thing. Nike was claiming the First Amendment right to lie, essentially, in their promotions and in their PR efforts. We've got commercial entities that are claiming that they have the right to free speech from government or from we the people, and yet at the same time, they're saying that they can restrain the right of free speech of us. For example, the guy in Albany, New York, who was arrested for wearing an anti-war T-shirt in the mall. Or have you ever seen protesters near a Walmart? You won't. Fox suing Al Franken. In their arguments, the counsel for Fox actually tried to argue that the commercial interest in Bill O'Reilly's image trumped First Amendment rights to criticize him. I mean, get this. How strange this is all getting. Okay, Star Kelso. First Star, we've got Steve in Santa Fe has called 1-800-TALK-YES, our number 1-800-825-5937, with a question for you. Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on with Star Kelso.
Great, thanks, but I'd also like to go ahead and have you show up in Albuquerque, New Mexico at some point in time. You're well needed.
And I'd love to do it.
Have your show there, too. But the question that I had is, why does this extend to the military as well? I mean, we've had issues where a lieutenant colonel, I guess his father was the head of peace now, or peacewithoutwar.org. And he went out to a protest and was subsequently brought up before a military tribunal and demoted. And yet we have a general who basically shows up in uniform at church functions and is able to go ahead and tout whatever line he wants, and nothing happens.
Well, what you have, Steve, is that when you join the military, you enter into a contract with the government voluntarily that sets aside many of your constitutional rights and that you are no longer subject to normal law. You're subject to something called the Uniform Code of Military Justice, UCMJ, which has different definitions of what is proof, different definitions of how guilt is determined, of judicial processes. I mean, it's like stepping into an alternative universe legal system. And ultimately, it's headed up by the commander-in-chief, who can decide that the general who's saying things that Bush likes is not going to get punished, whereas the lieutenant colonel who's saying things that Bush doesn't like does get punished. I mean, isn't that pretty much it, Star?
That's exactly right on point.
Yeah. So that's it, Steve. I'm sorry it's not, we can't... but that's the problem. When you join the military... there's a lot of benefits to joining the military, but one of the downsides is that you are leaving behind democracy for the time of your enlistment. So, Star, the last thing that I wanted to just discuss with you is that my research on this, my understanding of this, and what we've dug out is that Montana is the only state without at-will rules, but it has just cause rules. Can you explain what that means?
Right. I'm also licensed in Montana and Colorado, but... So I'm familiar with Montana just cause. And just cause means essentially just that. If you're absent too many times, if you're tardy, if you harass other employees, if you threaten other employees, you have poor work performance. And these are all documented in a employee handout that you receive. So you know what your expectations are. You're supposed to be there from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock or whatever period of time you're working. This is what you're supposed to do, and this is what you're not supposed to do. That's just cause. If you don't meet those standards, then they have just cause.
To fire you.
Right. At will, on the other hand, is anything, anywhere. I think it's important to bring out that during the oral argument, first of all, the manager who fired Mike Edmondson, 6 months before he was ordered to fire Mike Edmondson, had done an evaluation of Mike Edmondson's work performance on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. He graded out in all categories as very good. The company manager who ordered his firing, Mike Edmondson's firing, ordered this lower manager to fire him, did not know what Mike Edmondson's work performance was and how it had been rated.
And the manager who fired Mike Edmondson had no idea for over 6 months after he fired him why he was firing him. One of the questions, and you talk about the extent that at will can go, one of the questions at oral argument posed by one of the justices who voted in the majority upholding the firing was, he said, counsel, do you mean to tell me, and he's talking to the employer's counsel, that if Mr. Edmondson went out and married a woman of color, that his employer could fire him for that reason? And the answer of the employer was yes.
Yeah, because at will means at will. And so every state in the union except Montana has these at will rules that basically put employees totally at the mercy of an employer, even on their private time. Is that
on
the bottom
line? On their private time. And that's a key. When did
this happen?
When did what?
When did these at-will rules get put into law? I mean, this isn't common law from the 16th century in England or something.
That's where they argue, but so is slavery. You know, the United States at-will was developed in some writings, and I'm trying to find just where
this
those
is mostly
are.
Late 19th century, isn't it?
They were put down in a coherent form by, well, here it is. Actually, it was 1877.
Yeah.
Horace C. Wood wrote a treatise called Master and Servant, and he coined the phrase at will.
Mm-hmm.
So 1877. And when you look at the definition of slavery in Black's Law Dictionary, it states that civil relation in which one man has absolute power over life, fortune, and liberty of another. That's what we have here. The employer has absolute control over, by this ruling, everything that person does during his life, how much money he can make, and whether or not he can go to a public meeting.
Now, Star Kelso, these issues were addressed in the debates in the 40s around Taft-Hartley, and Roosevelt addressed these issues, not necessarily in the language that we're using, but as part of the New Deal, the rights of workers.
Right.
Have there been explicit, specific legal attempts on a state-by-state or a national basis to limit the at-will powers of employers and to, for example, say, okay, an employer... I mean, we limit employer... People say, a corporation should be allowed to do whatever it wants. It's a free country. But we limit corporations in a thousand different ways, you know, what they can do, how they can conduct business, what size bank account they can have, what kind of corporation they are, you know, what kind of taxes they... I mean, there's just... It's and we regulating business is just, you know, it's what we do as a society. Why not... Or have we, or how have we, or what is the history of our attempts to replace at will with just cause?
Well, that's the political arena. And, you know, particularly in Idaho, you have a state that is run by corporate America. Montana, on the other hand, you know, which is right next door, it's kind of surprising. They are just the opposite. They're very pro-person, individual.
Mm-hmm. Human rights are rather than corporate rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like if this thing is going to be rolled back, there's nobody out there. I mean, I don't know of any legislation, for example, that's pending that would have made this illegal. So it seems that if this is going to be rolled back, it's going to be because you're going to be able to get this thing in front of the Supreme Court and a miracle might happen. And people like Rehnquist might actually decide human beings should have equal or even superior rights to those of corporations. Is that the bottom line here?
Well, that is the bottom line. There was an article in Forbes magazine that really quite shocked me. And it states that employers are not always right, but they are guaranteed to do better than regulators and judges. And I have a hard time understanding where corporations are guaranteed the right to act arbitrarily, totally against the basic fundamental premises of our Constitution.
Well, this goes back to the doctrine of corporate personhood, you know, that
right.
that Santa Clara County defined corporations as human beings, and that, you know, American Tobacco in 1936 and J.C. Penney versus the state of Florida in 1936, I think, also, and all the way up to Boston versus Bilotti, that in each one of these cases, corporate rights have been nailed to the Bill of Rights. We've got Philip in Florida with a question for you. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Hey, Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. We're talking with Star Kelso.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say it, but you know, I think you're fighting a losing struggle. If you had somehow the laws were changed and we got rid of at will and people could lose their jobs for cause, they'd make up a cause. If a company wants to get rid of you, they're going to get rid of you.
But Philip, if you work in a union environment, and somebody tries to fire, I mean, a union environment essentially is a just cause environment. If somebody tries to fire you, you've got somebody to argue on your behalf. Doing away with at will would put the government in that position. And that is us. I mean, if the government is us, if that's the whole premise of an American democracy, then what is the government doing defending one unique type of institution among all the hundreds of kinds of institutions that we together can create? We can create churches, we can create governments, we can create corporations, we can create civic associations, we can create... Why is government defending one particular unique type of institution rather than defending we the people?
Because it's bought and paid for.
Yeah, well, that's we're all agreeing with that, and it's time to change that.
For example, I got hired. I had a job some years ago to be a teacher in a state prison. Okay, and I never did any teaching. They always gave me other kinds of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
After a year, they finally fired me. I was hired as a teacher. I never got a chance to do any teaching. I had a union. I paid union dues. They got rid of me anyway. The bottom line is this. No matter what you're going to do, the corporation is always going to prevail because all of these politicians depend upon the cash that they get from them in order to get reelected. And they're always going to
pass legislation. So, Philip, are we going to sit around and complain about this, or are we going to do something about it?
I don't think, you know something, I think this is one of those situations in life where the answer is there is no answer.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'm dead serious.
I mean, you got Star Kelso here trying to do something about it. I'm trying to do something about it. I would suggest, you know, I would hope that you would too. Star, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, Philip, you know, your argument rings home with so many people across the nation, and that is the fundamental problem. You can analogize it to a sporting event. You may be the lowliest underdog in the world, but you go out and you play the game. And Mike Edmondson didn't go looking for this fight, but he knows that this is not the America that he was brought up to believe in and to strive and defend. And so he has stepped forward. He has put his head up above the crowd. More people need to do that. Tom is doing that. You need to take stock of your position and say, where's my comfort level? If I'm in my comfort level, I need to get out of my comfort level and step forward.
Yeah,
the more people that do that, the more these people who think they run the corporations, are going to realize that the people really do have the power.
And Philip, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. We have in the United States had, you know, the pendulum goes back and forth. We had the progressive and populist movement. We put direct election of the Senate into place in 1917, for example. He said, that'll never happen. The Senate is completely corrupt. It's controlled by the state government. Women were given the vote in the 1920s. That would never happen. Slaves were freed. You know, we have faced some huge challenges in this country. This is another one I think that we can take it on. on. Steve in Santa Fe, we've got about 30 seconds left. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the music. Steve, hang on to the line. Star, hang on the line. We'll let Steve make the final comment. Star, you can close it up, and that'll end the show for us. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the Nose Spoon Feeding Zone.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories from the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Show. An email here from Jamie. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Our friend down in South Carolina, who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech. Jamie says, I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature, one word above the other. And then have a strip of paper that is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, and after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up.
We love Bush. We love Bush. We love Bush.
Impeach Bush.
Huh? You didn't know I'm going to say that, did you?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? In our chat room, one of the folks says, it does seem so hopeless, Smilemaker. It says, it does seem so hopeless sometimes. Tom, I'm glad you keep us hoping and coping. We are at a turning point in our history. It's exciting and scary all at once. But if we do nothing, our children will ultimately pay. And, boy, is that very much the case. Star Kelso says, Steve, our caller from Santa Fe, has dropped off the line during the break. So we've got about 2.5 minutes here just to wrap up the program. But by the way, our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta, Georgia. And Steph Stryker has been running the board, doing our engineering here from Detroit all day. Marvelous job. And, we do have a caller. Chris in Hawaii is on the line. Chris, you got a quickie here.
Yeah, Tom, I was just thinking that I just thought it was a little bit ironic that, although I think your cause is just, you pick someone that is in the logging industry. So I'm thinking, well, here's the left, and they're going to say, hey, great news, Mike, you got your job back. Bad news, we just shut the whole sawmill down.
Well, you know, I mean, a job is a job. I don't think that judging somebody's job or what they're doing, and, you know, there are certainly appropriate ways to do logging, Chris.
Okay, fair enough. I'm glad to hear you say that, because it just seems that you're picking somebody in a business environment that is under a lot of pressure from the left.
Yeah, we own some land, and we've logged part of it. I mean, there are ways to do it that are actually environmentally friendly, going with a horse. Anyhow, Star Kelso, your last comments here. We got about a minute left. Final thoughts on what people can do to help you or Mike Edmondson.
Well, Tom, that's critical question, and I think what people can do to help Mike Edmondson, and this story is about Mike Edmondson, they need
got 10 seconds here, Star.
They need to look at themselves. If a gym citizen can be fired for going to a public meeting, what can a private employer do to them? They need
then
to
anybody
stand
can
up.
We need to be standing up for our rights here. Star, thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in Monday, same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. See you then.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese,
humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk.